Welcome to the Hump Day Podcast. My name is Pastor Kevin Robertson. It is January 25th, 2017. Now, I had the privilege of interviewing Luan. Now, Luan's been coming to our church for over a year, and I always wondered what her story was. And so when she joined our beginnings class about 6 or 7 months ago, nobody showed up but Luan showed up to one of the classes, and then she started talking. And I was going, she has the most incredible, powerful, deep story that you can imagine. So I asked her if I could interview her today and find her story. I found out her story. So Luan, you were born where?
Ethiopia.
And tell us what year you were born. Tell us something about your family. And so it gives us some insight on where you came from.
I was born in Ethiopia in 1985.
Okay.
Of like 8 brothers and sisters.
Eight.
Yes.
A lot. Okay.
And we lived in Ethiopia for, my family lived in Ethiopia for years, but we are originally like Eritrea, but at that time we used to be one with Ethiopia.
Okay. Now Eritrea, if I can pronounce it right, Eritrea, it's a whole nother country in a sense. Of the same type of people, Ethiopian people, but two different countries, correct?
Yes, we used to be in the same country. We're the same people. Was considered as one Ethiopia, but in 1991, after a 30-year of war, we got independence from Ethiopia, so we became our own country.
Okay, so you were born in 1985. So when you were 6. There was no more war, right?
Yes, there was no more war, and we finally had a country, and it was, the soldiers came back.
Okay, so in the first war, did you lose family members in that first war?
Yes, a lot.
Okay.
A lot.
Who did you lose?
I lost my aunt, my mom's sister.
Okay.
My uncle lost his leg.
Wow.
And my father's side, there are a lot, so... Some uncles.
Okay. So at 6 years old, you were aware of death and war. I mean, it was very, how would you say, it was daily in your life, right?
It was normal.
It was normal to deal with death all the time, lose family members. So now there's no war. There's no war going on right now. So then what happens around 1998?
So in 98, everything was good and everybody was working, going to school. And in 98, out of nowhere, in the TV, the president of Ethiopia announced that there were going to be a war.
Okay.
And the people had to protect the country.
Okay.
But we had no idea what it was. And we were living in Ethiopia at that moment. So we were just confused. So,
okay. And you were born in Ethiopia.
Yes, so I didn't even think that it would include me.
Right.
Since I was...
Because you were 12 years old when this is all happening, right?
Yes.
In a sense, did your parents assure you, don't worry, nothing's going to happen? Or did you sense fear from your parents?
No, my father is a very strong man, so he never showed fear.
Okay.
But I would hear from neighbors, they would be like, oh, we have to. It's a war and we're going to die. And they would say a lot of things.
Okay.
So it was scary.
And so therefore, as a 12-year-old, now, I think we were talking before, a normal 12-year-old is going through, liking boys, wearing makeup, wanting to go to Disneyland, and then you as a 12-year-old, you're worried about your life now,
yes.
Not losing your life. So did the war start then? The war happened?
Yes, it started. Like, after that, we were hearing the Eritrean press. It was not allowed to hear, but we were hearing the Eritreans say that we want to fix this with peace.
Okay.
We don't want a war, but we were hoping for that. But we saw that start bombing.
Okay.
And
so you were living around in Ethiopia where bombs were starting to happen.
I was in the city,
okay.
So it was not like, didn't happen right there,
okay.
But it was on the TV we
okay.
would watch.
That you would see it. And then how did the war start getting closer to your family? How did that start affecting you personally?
it's when they start deporting and
okay.
they start taking. So first they take my father to jail.
Oh, they just arrested your dad?
Yes, just because he's Eritrean.
Was it in front of you?
Yes, we were home and we were sleeping in the morning, early in the morning, and a lot of soldiers came with guns and they had pointed guns on us, even
oh,
on the kids.
They just broke in your house?
They came and they knocked.
Okay.
And then they forced themselves in and they went to my father straight to his bed and say, we need you for questions.
Okay.
And he would start getting dressed. And they say, you should pack some stuff because we will keep you for a while. We don't know when you come home.
Wow.
But my father was very calm. My sister got really mad, but they had to stop us and they would say that they would threaten us with their guns.
Okay, so they were pointing a gun at you.
Yes, on all of us. And they forced him to, and then he didn't fight them
okay.
back. So he went and then they took three Eritrean men from the building because we lived in an apartment. So, and it was like a huge apartment
mm-hmm.
building. So they took three people, three Eritreans in a bus, like kind of a police car,
okay.
and they just took them. We don't know where.
So how does this mess with a 12-year-old's mind? All of a sudden you're sitting at home and you're watching the news and then all of a sudden you have these soldiers or police officers knock on the door and point a gun to you and then take your dad away. Does that just mess your mind up any?
Yes, it messes up, and until now it messes up because of about trust, betrayal, because
mm-hmm.
it makes you hard trusting people. It really ruins your mind because it's hard after believing and trusting, because we live together with these people, we ate
mm-hmm.
together, and then out of nowhere they have to point out like we are not part of them and out of
yeah.
nothing.
But to me, and I don't mean to be, ignorant here, but Eritreans and Ethiopians, you can't tell you guys apart, can you?
No, we were the same people, and the people don't have any problems with
okay.
each other. We are same. We look the same.
Okay.
We eat the same food. We wear the same traditional.
And the same accent.
Same alphabet, but different language.
Okay, different language, and so therefore your dad was deported. Okay, then what happens? Did he eventually come back home?
To Ethiopia? No, never. They took the home, they took his factory, they took his bank money, they took everything.
Okay.
He never came back.
So now you have no idea where your dad is. And then all of a sudden, you were sharing with me, then you were deported as well.
We find out where my dad was. They put him in a big jail, kind of like a big hole.
Okay. And he didn't do
deported.
Anything.
No, nothing. They say he was helping Eritrea for war, but there was no war at that time. But he was working in an embassy,
okay.
which the Ethiopian gave us. So it was, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Okay.
But they were saying that he's supporting Eritrea, but...
Okay, so as a 12-year-old, then all of a sudden, did the soldiers and the police come after your family then?
And then they came to us, me and my two sisters were living there. My mom at that moment was in Sweden.
Okay.
So me and my two older sisters were at home, and then they come this time at night, and the same way with a lot of soldiers, with guns. It was very scary. We were going to sleep, and they came, and they say that, okay, you are going to your country tomorrow morning. And I remember asking, this is my country.
And how old were you then?
I was 12.
You were 12. So your mom was in Switzerland.
Sweden, yeah.
Sweden. And so you were by yourself?
It was me and my two sisters, and we had a maid.
Okay, how old were your two sisters?
My older sister was, she was 16.
Okay.
And the other one, probably at that time, 25.
Oh, good night. Okay, so this was during the night, too?
This was at night, yeah.
At night. So you were dragged out at 12 years old, and I keep emphasizing 12, because this is crazy for a child at 12 years old to be going through this. You just lost your dad. Your mother's living in another country or staying in another country. Now you're thrown on some type of bus, right?
Yes.
Okay. Explain the bus ride now.
Okay. So they send us, they take us in at 5 a.m. They took us to the police station, and then we had to start the journey with other Eritrean families.
Okay.
We're from Ethiopia too. So, they put us in a one big bus, and then they say like, this is it. And they gave me opportunity to stay over there.
Okay.
But I didn't want to stay. I wanted to go to with my sisters.
So they were going to say, you can stay by yourself, but your sisters are going to go.
Yes. They say it's dangerous for you here, but you can stay here if you can take us to your where your brothers are or your families. And at that moment, I didn't want to tell them where my brothers are.
Because you are afraid of what?
So they would take them to jail. Because the, at that time, the boys, the men, they would keep them to jail.
Okay.
Because of the, if they go back, they would go to the military. They were scared of them.
Right.
So if I stayed there, I knew I had to point them to my brothers.
So you knew as a guy. So you knew as a young girl, you were, as we say in the United States, you would have to rat them out to say, here, you can take me here. But they were using you to get to your brothers, and you knew that, right?
Yes, I
and
did.
So you go, no, no, I'll stay with my sister. And so now you're on this bus ride to a country you've never been?
I was there for vacation.
Okay, you were there for vacation. Okay.
It's 2 o'clock.
So how long did it take?
If you drive straight from Ethiopia to Eritrea, the drive is like about 3 days, day
okay.
and night. But at that time, it took us 10 days to get to the city, to the capital city
okay.
of Eritrea, Asmara. So we start the journey and early in the morning, and then we were just in the deserts with no food for 2 days, for 1 day, the whole
yeah,
day.
Yeah, no food.
No, like they would stop like after like 7-8 hours, and we would like share something little,
okay.
and then we didn't eat for long hours, just ride. And,
right.
And then at night we wanted to use the restroom, and they didn't let me.
Mm-hmm.
They were very, very aggressive. But this is the soldiers from little tribes,
right.
so they have no idea. They were brainwashed.
Okay.
So they think that.
So then you finally got to the border. Then what happened?
And when we got to the border, it's about early, very early. And they say that, okay, here, you can go to your country. Over there is your country. And we were trying to cross the border, like the road. And out of nowhere, this one man comes and tells us that we have to go straight to where the...
To stay on the road.
On the road, yeah.
Okay.
Stay on the road, because if we go on the sides, there might be bombs.
Okay.
Which we didn't have no idea, because we would have done it.
Right.
And so we had to stay all in line and then go straight. And the one of the... So when we crossed, like we walked about like 30, 40 minutes. And then one of the soldiers came down and he said, what happened? Because
mm-hmm.
we were almost going to shoot at you
right.
guys. And we told them that we were deported and we were Eritreans, and he was very upset, and he had to communicate with the others so they don't shoot, because
okay.
that was, I believe, part of the plan.
Okay, those were the guards that were guarding the borders.
Yeah, the border soldiers.
They would have shot you guys, but I think you were telling me that, thank goodness, a lady was wearing a white dress.
Yes, one of the lady were wearing a white dress. He said, if we didn't see her... we saw a mother, he said.
Right.
We could have stopped shooting.
We were shooting you. So during this war, you lost more family members.
It's very young ones, too. Cousins.
Yeah. So how old were your cousins? Were they in the war, or they just got shot?
They were in the war, because I was there, and I was really involved in the war, because I wanted to be a soldier, too.
Right. At 12 years old?
Yes.
Okay.
And they didn't let me back, because I was too young. And I wanted to volunteer as
right.
a food maker, anything that would
right.
help. So my cousins would come from, they were about like 20, 21, very young.
Okay.
So they would come to visit from the military, and then they would tell me stories.
Right.
And they would tell me what's going on, how bad
mm-hmm.
it is, because I was very interested
mm-hmm.
in knowing. And then the next time, some of them wouldn't come back.
Okay.
And then one came shot in his foot, and he was very young, like
okay.
maybe 20. And,
So he was shot in his foot.
Yeah, he was shot in his foot. And then these things, mostly I was the one who had to answer the phone, and I was the one who had to tell my father. And it's very hard because he already lost his brothers,
uh-huh.
and these are his their kids, his little.
Okay, so you would answer the phone, then someone on the other phone would say, your cousin or so-and-so, he was killed in the war. Then you had to tell your dad.
Yeah, but mostly the killing, they wouldn't tell us. They would
okay.
say it very respectful way, and they have to wait.
Okay.
But the shooting part, yeah, they would say like, okay, this one is he got hurt.
Okay.
And so if you can bring him some food, no, some clothing, that would be nice.
Okay.
And he's in the hospital.
So how in the world do you grew up in the church? Your parents were Christians.
Yes.
And you were telling me before this that you grew up as a Christian. Did you struggle with your faith as a child? Is Jesus in my life? Is Jesus protecting us? I mean, where was your faith in this? Because I've noticed in the United States, a lot of people throw their faith away because they don't get a job, or they throw their faith away because they go through a divorce. But your family's getting killed in the first war. You get deported as a 12-year-old. Your dad gets dragged out of his house, and who knows what happens. Did you lose your faith in God, or how did that work?
No, I never lost my faith, but I have always questioned it.
Okay.
Because I would have always questioned, especially when Jesus had a problem, because I'm like, he's a person, and but I had faith.
Jesus is a what?
I would think I had a problem with saying that if Jesus is a person.
Right.
And how can he come here, and then how can he be our savior? I have always thought. So I knew I believed in God, but with the angels, and I was always questioning.
Right.
Because I had my faith. I had to stay in faith. And through all this,
right,
I think that's what kept me going, because of the faith.
Okay.
And the
Your faith in God.
Yeah. And right. I would always talk to God. I wouldn't talk to people. I would always talk to God. Through all this, my family would worry, stressing with each other. And I would never talk to people. I would get guidance somehow,
okay,
in dreams or.
Okay, so basically, you wouldn't talk to your family members or people about your worries. You would talk to God directly.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so somehow you got this peace with a question mark in your
yes.
life. Okay. So during this war, then what happened? Okay, because the story doesn't stop there. It gets far more interesting here. And so during this war, did you stay in that Eritrea?
I stayed a little in Eritrea, but we had to move on because of the war.
Okay.
We couldn't stay more. And my father, they lost everything too. So my mom was in Sweden, so we had to go to her.
Okay. So you moved to Sweden?
Yes.
Okay. And your dad stayed in Eritrea?
He took us.
He
came with us.
Okay, he came with Sweden.
Yeah.
So now you're living in Sweden. How old are you now in Sweden?
Around 13, 14.
13, 14 years
yeah.
old. So you stayed there until you're 18? 17
until about
years 20. Old? 20 years old.
Yes.
Now take me to the process that, because I'm interviewing here in LA, and you're born in 85. To me, you're still very, very young. And so now you're in Sweden. Tell me the story, your process, your thinking of, I'm going to move out of Sweden. Tell me about that, when you made a decision to move out.
Yeah, it was like, first I had still like to deal with the emotional, like not fitting anywhere.
Yeah.
Because I was born in Ethiopia, and then I had to be kicked out from there, and then I went to Eritrea, and I was still, now my first, even though they accepted me, they loved me and everything, but I still have accent,
right.
So I was not still fully Eritrean, and I didn't fit in. And when I went to Sweden, I still had to be like in a camp, in a foreigner camp, and I still didn't feel.
So you lived in a camp?
In the beginning, yeah, in the
refugee camp.
Refugee camp.
Okay,
yeah.
And I've been to a refugee camp in Kenya.
Mm.
I've been to refugee camps are not pretty. They're really. I don't know what type of
refugee. No, in Sweden they're beautiful,
they're
actually, because they give us nice like a
okay.
nice area.
Because Kenya was just a dump; it was terrible
yeah.
In Kenya, and I've had the privilege of being in Ethiopia. The first time I went to Africa was I flew to Ethiopia, and people were real nice, but I was American, and so now at the refugee camp you felt okay. I don't belong in Ethiopia. I don't belong in Eritrea. And now I'm in Sweden, and you're going, I don't have a home, correct?
Yes.
I don't have a place to live. I don't have somewhere where I can say, this is my home. So what made you decide to say, you know what, it's the United States. I'm going to move to the United States.
First, it was like more like, okay, my main thing is my brother. I'm very
okay.
close to him. So I wanted to
And what's your brother's name?
Jonathan.
Jonathan?
Yes.
Okay.
And I wanted to be closer to him.
So when did Jonathan move?
Jonathan moved here after the war. He was put in jail, actually. They caught
okay.
him crossing the border to
okay.
Kenya, running away from the Ethiopian.
Okay.
So they caught him in Kenya and they put him in jail. And very horrible jail, and they had to beat them. They beat them because one of the guys tried to escape, and they beat all of them. And they would take them to collect cottons.
Right.
It was horrible. And finally,
they take them to where?
You know, cotton, plucking cottons.
Oh, to pick cotton?
Yeah,
okay.
For free, like.
Okay, so he was a cotton picker. He
yeah.
was picking cotton out in a field somewhere.
Yes, they
okay.
were just doing that. They were, yeah, for
okay.
free.
Okay.
And
it's like slavery.
It's slavery, yes, in Ethiopia, and without doing nothing. Like,
yeah.
And it's horrible.
Okay.
Yeah, and...
So he's like a modern-day slave.
Exactly.
That's what he was.
Exactly.
Okay.
And it's in Africa. It's not somewhere, nowhere. So
right,
it's
right.
like, yeah.
What are you going to do?
Exactly. So they were very mean. So somehow with prayers, that's one of my faith answers too. Because I was praying. It was very horrible to
right.
not, because we didn't hear from him. And then he passed to Kenya. From Kenya, he came to the United States
okay.
after the war.
So what year did he come to the United States?
It was around the same year that we went to Sweden.
Okay.
So around like maybe 2002.
Okay.
Not sure, but
so he moved to the United States just to get out here. But you wanted to see your brother. You love your brother and wanted to be. You were close to your brother. You wanted to move to the United States, right?
Yes, I wanted to be with him, and I wanted to study film too.
Okay.
So that I can make my story in a motion.
Okay.
So I moved here.
So basically, you're thinking, my life is crazy, and it would be a great story or a play or a movie to write and to film. So you wanted to say, I'm moving to the United States and I want to share the story of what's going on between the Ethiopians and the Eritreans. Eritreans. I'm going to butcher that. But anyway, so when did you decide I'm going to move to the United States?
It was right after I graduated high school.
And what year was that?
It was 2007.
Okay, 2007. So this is where, to me, it's just unbelievable. So in 2007, you graduated from high school, and you go, you know what? I'm going to move to the United States.
Yes, and it was by myself. And
by myself. And all you knew was your brother's out. What city was your brother living in?
My brother was in San Francisco.
Okay.
But when he knew I wanted to study film, and
okay.
he moved to LA for me.
Okay.
But he, what right, when I, before I came, I got accepted. When I came here, like 1 week before, he went back to San Francisco.
Okay, so now,
so
we one week, so he said, I'll move to LA. So you go, oh, yay, because I'm clapping on a podcast. No one knows I'm clapping. And so then you went. Moved to LA and he stayed for 1 week and he moved back to San Francisco. Now you're by yourself in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
What do you do?
I went to college.
Okay.
I went to college and I was just studying. And we had a group of Swedish students here.
Okay.
So that made it a little, like we had each other.
Okay. Well, that's good. And then during college, you met a boyfriend.
Yes.
Boy. Well, what's his name?
Franco.
Now, Frank was from South Africa?
West Africa, but from Paris.
From Paris.
Yes.
Okay. Tell us about how that relationship started.
Yes, we were in college, and we met in college, and we both had, like, strong backgrounds, and he was a really nice man.
Okay.
So we ended up, like, living together, and we...
But
yeah,
you said you were like best friends.
Yeah, we were more like best friends.
Okay.
So because we were supporting each other, he was doing music.
Okay.
And I was doing my film and like writing and going to school, and we grew up really strong spiritually and everything.
Okay. So in a sense, you're going, okay, I'm getting my life normalized. I'm becoming an American. Life is going to be a lot easier now. Were you thinking that?
Yes, yes,
okay.
yes.
Like, I live free. I don't have to worry about these wars and crazy things. And then all of a sudden, he was going to work. And then what happened?
He Yes, we had a little argument, so he was living on his own, by his own, and then he was going to school on his motorcycle, and he got in an accident
in
Santa Monica, and he went to coma, brain damage.
Okay, and you got a phone call.
Yes.
That said, Frank was in a motorcycle accident.
Yes.
You need to come to the hospital.
Yes.
Right? Okay, tell us about that.
So when I heard... he was in a hospital, I just went straight to the hospital, and I talked to I found the police, we had to find information, and then they told me that he will not make it through the surgery, 5-hour surgery.
Okay.
But I had faith in then again, I told him, no, he will make it.
Okay, so you had faith in God that he will make it.
Yes,
okay.
And he made it.
He made the surgery. Okay, so you were praising God, you were going, thank you God, you know, this stuff, because the doctors are telling you, he wasn't going to make it in the surgery. And then you were excited that he lived past the surgery.
Yes.
Then what happened?
And then they say that his brain was dead, damaged.
Okay.
But we were inside the hospital, and I put his mom's voice, and then he would move.
Okay, so you put the phone to Frank's head.
Yes, I put the phone in... his mom was on the phone.
Okay.
He's very close to his mom.
So when she was talking, you saw Frank...
He tried to move his lips.
Tried to move his lips.
And tried to wake up. And then that was a sign. And then when his brother called, he's very close to his brother too, he tried to move his feet.
Okay.
Like, so by that time, they say that, he's in pain, But I was like, no, he's reacting. Obviously, his brain was not dead.
Okay.
And then,
so what they were saying was... the doctors or the nurses thought he was in pain because but what you thought he was doing was he was acting, trying to respond to his brother,
talk
to his brother. But then they injected him with
morphine
and then he stopped.
And he shut off, yeah.
Okay. Then what happened?
Then he didn't wake up. I was there the whole night. And the morning they were going to check on him, and he didn't wake up. But he stayed almost 2 weeks, and within 2 weeks, we would pray.
Right.
We would pray day and night. His aunt came from France, and we would pray with him. And he had tears in his eyes. He would listen music because he was a producer and a rapper, and he was an artist.
Right.
So he would listen to music, and he would try to move, or he would have tears. So he was there.
Right. And so, but eventually, he passed.
Yes,
He passed away. Were you in the room when he passed?
I was downstairs, and they say that they had to check him, but I was there. I was feeling it, but I was there right after he passed.
Now you were praying for him to get past the surgery, and you thought the doctors were wrong when it came. He's responding. He's not in pain. And then when he passes, does that shake your faith in God, or just where were you emotionally and spiritually then?
I was after he was dead, I was still had faith that he was not dead.
Oh, really?
Yes, I would still wait until I would still wait he would come back.
Okay.
But at the end, I was still thankful that his mom get to see him.
Right.
That is better than just dying.
Right.
And that's my brother. I talked to my brother, and that's what he said. He said, you know what? It could have been worse if he died right on the place.
Right.
So
yeah.
You get to be with him, so be thankful.
Yeah.
I remember that what he said.
That's my brother said that.
So it really made sense, because we have to be thankful through the horrible, because it could have been more horrible. He could have died right away.
But see, that's a deep statement, because most people would not choose to think that way.
Yes.
Like if somebody in the United States would say, look, you better be thankful, it could have been worse. And you would, and an American would go, shut up. What are you saying? He died. But somehow in your mind, your brother was right based on your experiences in life, because you've had a difficult life. So when your brother says, hey, it could have been worse, he could have died, you wouldn't have been there, you wouldn't have talked to him and stuff like that, then you choose to go, yes, that gives me peace.
Yes.
Which is a deep statement.
Yes.
It's deep. Okay. So now that you lost your best friend in the United States, so then you met somebody else,
yes,
dating someone else, right?
Yes,
okay.
But I couldn't, yeah, I couldn't work out because we were, I was not ready emotionally.
Okay.
And it was not fair for him too, so we were not, it was not, I think it was not supposed to happen.
Right.
But, yeah, but then I got pregnant.
Okay.
So that's the baby, Franco.
Franco's so cute.
Thank you.
He's so cute. But let's go back to your brother. Now, your brother is in San Francisco.
Yes.
And then you were going to an Ethiopian church at that time. He was going to an Ethiopian church in San Francisco.
San Jose.
Oh, you used to live in San Jose.
It's a beautiful city.
It is. Very expensive. Very expensive. But then something happened at church for him. Can you explain that? Because a lot of these podcasts have been people that have been hurt by the church, have gone through difficulties. So you told me that your brother is very spiritual, right?
Yes, very spiritual, very strong, very faithful, and he's a very strong man, very godly.
Okay, and he was struggling. What was he struggling with his life?
He was struggling of, he was gay.
He's gay.
And but he was fighting his gay, and he's still fighting it. Because of, he's very spiritual and he thinks that it's fault, it's wrong, but he didn't choose it.
Okay.
Because he...
Yeah, so he was, he's in a battle of homosexuality. And so by his upbringing, he in his mind, he goes, this is wrong. And so he went to church to try to what?
To get help and to get, because he was... He already had it from the war kind of PTSD. He was already damaged when he came here, and then when he got here, he didn't know anyone, so he went to the church for support.
Okay.
And he didn't want to lie to them, so he went out with his homosexuality, and but the church didn't accept him. They actually told him to. They removed him from the church.
Okay, so he's struggling with PTSI.
PTSD. Yes.
Which is post-traumatic something stress.
Stress disorder.
And this is all from the war.
Yes.
And then he's going through a battle of his own inner self and saying, you know what, I'm a homosexual, but I'm really struggling with this. So he goes to a church and he says, look, I'm struggling with post-traumatic stress syndrome or disorder. And he also, being very open, said, I'm struggling with homosexuality. Correct?
Yes.
So, and he's asking for help.
Yes.
Correct? So what happens? Okay, so he asked for help from the church, this church somewhere in San Jose. So what happened then?
But they denied him. They
denied him.
They say that they would not accept that. And they would not accept homosexuality in their church, and he was not welcome.
So
and
they
that
kicked,
really brought they kicked him out.
They kicked
church.
Him out.
Yes.
For being honest and saying I'm struggling with homosexuality.
Exactly.
And they kicked him out.
Exactly.
Okay, so this affects your brother deeply now.
It does.
Okay.
It did.
Explain that to us.
Because it made a really bad damage on his mind.
Okay.
And my brother has been mentally ill for a year. And he lost his home. He became homeless. And then this all started with, of course, that has affected him too.
Okay.
So he lost his mind because of that.
So, and as his sister, you're very close to him. Okay, you're coming to the United States. He moved up to San Francisco, and then you knew he was gay.
Yeah.
And but you loved him, it's your brother.
Yeah.
And so how did this affect you? Then when you hear this story about how he opened up, just wanted to get some help, get some prayer, they said, you're denied, kicked out of the church.
It really made me upset. It really, really made me mad. Like, and I had like, it really made me angry.
Okay.
I mean, still makes me angry, but I'm trying to focus on him more now than them.
Okay.
But it's really, really sad.
What do you think the church should have done?
The church should have helped him.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think a church should be judging.
Right.
Because nobody's clean.
Right.
And I don't think nobody have a right to judge others, especially a church.
Right.
Because that's where it's God's home, and it's not our job to judge.
Right.
And they should have helped him. They should have welcomed him. They should have. I mean, they don't have to say it in front of the people if they don't want to,
yeah.
But the priest should have at least talked to him,
right.
Stay by him.
And they weren't putting him in leadership or anything. He wanted to just attend the church.
Yes.
They wouldn't let him attend the church. So then you were just saying he had a mental breakdown. He lost his home. He lost everything. And this is just 6 or 7 months ago, right?
Yes.
And now he's homeless.
Yes.
Okay. Now, this is where it comes into our conversation 6 or 7 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you were telling me. When you and I were the only ones in the class.
Yes.
And so you said, I'm going to go out there and try to find him.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So how did that? The first trip, when you went, you were going to try to find your brother. Tell us about that.
It was very hard.
Okay.
It was the test for my faith too. But
oh,
I still had, yeah, it was very, very hard because I had to go out and find my brother on the street.
And you had your baby.
Yes.
And how old was your baby?
He was a year then.
A year.
A year, yeah.
So this is not a baby that could just, hey, I'll see you in a couple of hours. This is a baby in a stroller.
Yes.
Right? It's
yes.
not like a 9-year-old or a 14-year-old or a 16-year-old. It's a 1-year-old.
Yes.
So now you're walking down the street, just randomly in San Francisco, looking for him.
Yes.
Okay. Did you find him?
Yes, I did find him.
Okay.
It took me 2 days, but I had like some guidance. I had to pray and go. But I met very, very loving and very good people on the way that helped me through the journey.
Right.
And it's like angels.
So did you cry when you see a son? Did you give him a big hug? Or how
I was
did that
very
go?
Happy. It was the first time he saw my baby. He was more excited than me when I was pregnant. So
okay.
I was... You really wanted, like, oh, I'm going to be uncle. He had others,
right.
But he wanted really, really waiting for this baby.
Right.
And when I saw him, the third day was our Easter, Ethiopian
right.
Easter. That day I saw him, and it was very beautiful because he, even though he had lost, like, his mind and he was on the street, and he was still straight,
mm-hmm.
strong, and he was happy to see the baby. I just hugged him, and
right.
he said, thank God you came here, he says.
Uh-huh.
And but we couldn't have a normal conversation.
Because he's mental,
he was very out, like, and been praying and still didn't give up.
And this wasn't drugs, this is just mental illness that was...
Mental illness, too. But, I mean, of course, he used drugs to
okay.
help his self-medicate
himself.
Yes.
Okay. So then you had to leave, and I think you gave him some kind of a phone.
That was the second time I told you,
yeah.
and then you gave
yeah.
me the phone, and I gave him.
Okay, so if you guys are listening, she wanted to give her brother to communicate, so we bought a little track phone, which was $8, and we had 2 hours of talk time, and I gave her the phone, and I said, give this to your brother, and so you can talk to him, and you did.
Yes.
But then he lost the phone.
Yes, he lost it. But he helped us for like when I was there.
Okay. So yeah. So this is where the miracle starts kicking in. A miracle that you and I have been praying for.
Yes.
So tell us where your brother is and what's he doing now.
Right now, he actually, like a couple of months ago, he called and he talked to me. He was
mm-hmm.
in a hospital. But he doesn't like the mental hospital, but he's doing much better. He's
okay.
coming to himself.
Okay. And you're having a normal conversation with him.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And he remembers everything, and through all he would say, he would still remember. And he, even though he still had that love.
Okay.
And he was still protective, and it's going much better for him now.
Well, that's good. And your relationship with your brother is going well.
It's getting well. And there's other church, actually, they're helping him right now.
Oh,
the
good.
Priest went and they took him to the church. It's
uh-huh.
a new church in San Francisco. It's the Orthodox church. So I told them the truth. I don't know, somehow the last time God just gave me sign to contact this church.
Okay.
So that they went and they took him to the church and they made him with the cross, they prayed with him,
uh-huh.
and they welcomed him as he is. So that helped a lot.
Wow.
Because they say that it's a God's home and you are welcome and you are God's son. So
oh,
that's a very,
and
this
so
is recently.
Did that affect your brother a lot spiritually as well? Like a church just said, we're not here to judge you. We want to see you healed. We want to see you transformed or restored.
Yes.
Right? And so is your brother seem to be happy now in that church?
Yes, he's very happy. I mean, it's still, it's a process,
mm-hmm.
but he's much better now.
Okay.
Much better. And he actually talked to me normal after a year.
Wow.
And it's a miracle.
Okay. So let's sum this up, okay, in this conversation, because we've been everywhere. 12 years old, you were deported from your country. You saw your dad being deported. You lost cousins, aunts, stuff to the war. A cousin losing a foot.
It's 2:30.
Going through some difficulty. You moved to another country, and all three countries you said, I'm not a citizen here, I'm not at home. You moved here with your brother to go to see your brother, to be close to your brother. Your brother moves to San Francisco. Then you get a boyfriend who dies in a motorcycle accident. You're on a rebound, and so you got in a relationship, you got pregnant. And then your brother, who is gay, gets kicked out of a church, has a mental breakdown, is homeless in San Francisco. You go out by yourself with your one-year-old, walking the streets of San Francisco. You find him, and then it takes a couple months, and then he eventually goes into a mental facility, and they put him on the right drugs or however. So now you have your brother back, correct?
Yes.
And how old are you now?
I'm 30.
You're 30 years old. So this all happened. You haven't even hit 31 yet, and this has all happened. So let me ask you this. Where's your faith now? Where's your faith in God now? Are you optimistic about the future? You know, are you optimistic about your son? What kind of advice, if somebody's listening to this podcast, that we go, man, I've gone through a difficult life too. But how do you grab onto hope? How do you grab onto God, even in the midst of going through trial after trial after trial after trial?
Because I feel like there's a trial and there's a blessing. There's a trial, there's a blessing.
Okay.
And if you keep your faith, He always give you something to hold on to. Because through all I went through, He gave me my son out of nowhere.
Okay.
So He gave me like something to live for.
That's your blessing.
That's my blessing.
Okay.
And it's like He rewards you. And no matter what bad situation you go to, if you keep faith and patient, you get reward.
Okay.
And the reward is more better. That makes you forget
everything. Right. And the key thing is patience.
Patience. And that's the hardest one.
That's very difficult. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate this interview. The Lawan goes to our 10:45 service, so if this meant anything to you and you see the Lawan on our service next Sunday, give her a hug and just tell her thank you for sharing her story. And thank you for being part of our podcast. Remember, join us on our service at 6 o'clock on Saturday night, 9 o'clock Sunday morning, and 10:45 Sunday morning. Remember, every day is a gift from God. Use it wisely. And I will see you guys this weekend or next podcast. God bless you.